Can I get a day or two off? Kelly asked when they finally disembarked. We'll want you back to Quantico for an extended brief, Ritter told him. Fine. Two security officers took the Russian into custody. Thanks for the try, John, Admiral Maxwell said, taking the younger man's hand. I'm sorry for what I said before, Podolsky said, doing the same. You were right. Kelly watched the two admirals get in their waiting staff car. So what happens to them? Kelly asked Greer. Dutch was in line for a fleet, maybe the CNO's job. I don't suppose that'll happen now. The operation, well, it was his baby. That'll finish him. That's not fair, Kelly said. No, it isn't, but that's the way things are. Greer steered Kelly into his staff car. Get some rest and call me when you're ready. You know, Bob Ritter thinks you may have a place in his organization. Think it over. Yes, sir, Kelly replied. A few hours later, showered and refreshed, Kelly parked the scout in front of Sandy's bungalow. He'd come home to something, he told himself, for the first time. John! He hadn't expected the hug, even less so the tears in her eyes as she pulled him inside. It's okay, Sandy. I'm fine. When she started sobbing, he knew that it was not for him at all. What's wrong?
They killed Doris.
Time stopped again. Kelly closed his eyes in pain. What happened, Sandy? He asked quietly.
We got her well, John. We took her home. And then I called today like you told me to, and a policeman answered. Doris and her father, too. Both murdered.
Okay. He moved her to the sofa, but she clung to him desperately. Sam and Sarah, he asked.
I haven't told them yet. She straightened up. How are you?
A little frazzled, then he had to tell the truth. It was a washout. The mission didn't work. We were trying to get some people out of North Vietnam, prisoners, but something went wrong. Failed again, he added. They were silent a moment. Then Sandy said,
Doris said there were others, other girls. They still have them.
Yeah. I'm going to try and get them out.
It won't matter getting them out. Unless
I know. The thing that kept following him around, Kelly thought. There was only one way to make it stop. He had to turn and face it. Well, Henry, that little job was taken care of this morning, Piaggi told him. Nice and clean. Then that's that, Tucker observed with satisfaction. Best $20,000 I ever spent, he thought. Henry, the other girls, Piaggi pointed out, you got a real business now. People inside like them are dangerous. Take care of it, okay? Douglas and Ryan exchanged sober looks as they listened over the phone as the officer in Pittsburgh ran down the details of the double murder. Detective, Ryan asked on a hunch, what was the physical condition of Doris's body? She was neatly dressed, all cleaned up. Her hair was nice. She looked pretty decent. Douglas read his lieutenant's mind and nodded. Somebody took the time to get her well. It wasn't their invisible man. And they had a starting place. The one bit of usable information to come out of Pittsburgh was a name, Sandy. Sandy had driven Doris Brown back home to her father. It wasn't much, but cases often broke on less than that. How did it fit in? Ryan leaned back in his chair, examining everything he knew. On a hunch, he called Dr. Farber to ask him to check out the doctor's Rosen and see if there was a doctor, female, named Sandy. Farber called back a few minutes later. No, no doctor, just a nurse, a Sandra O'Toole. Thank you, doctor. I'll be back to you. Connection, Ryan said to his partner. How much do you want to bet that Sandra O'Toole knows John Kelly, too? The lady had brains to go with her guts, Kelly told himself as he guided Springer back to his island home. Sandy had given him the information she'd learned from Doris. Now he had a new name, Tony P-something, P-G, something like that. Italian, drove a blue Lincoln. Mafia, probably. And somebody else named Eddie. But Sandy had matched that name with a guy who had been killed by a police officer. It had made the front page. What if that cop was the man Henry had inside? Speculation, he knew, but worth checking out. Ritter had to be careful, and this couldn't wait for official sanction. So he drove to the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History and found a public phone. The call connected him to the desk of the KGB resident, the chief of station for Washington, D.C.
Yes, a voice said.
This is Charles, Ritter said, swallowing his nervousness. This is a matter of concern to you. I propose a meeting. I'll be at the National Zoo in an hour, at the enclosure for the white tigers.
How will I know you? The voice asked.
I'll be carrying a copy of Newsweek in my left hand.
1 hour, the voice grumbled.
He hadn't been to the zoo in years, Ritter realized. He'd have to bring the kids here, now they were old enough.
Hello, Charles, a voice said beside him.
Hello, Sergei?
I do not know you, the KGB resident observed.
This conversation is unofficial, Ritter explained.
Aren't they all, Sergei noted.
I just returned from Vietnam, Ritter said as they walked.
The purpose of your cruise?
A visit. An unplanned one?
I believe it failed, the Russian said, letting Charles know that he knew what was going on.
Not completely. We brought someone home with us. His name is Nikolai, Ritter said, handing over Grisanov's paybook. It would be an embarrassment to your government if it were to be revealed that a Soviet officer was interrogating American POWs. You see, the people he's been interrogating have been reported as being dead by your little friends.
I did not know any of that, Sergei said.
It's true, I assure you.
And where is our colonel?
In a safe place,
Sergei nodded. What do you propose?
It would be useful if your government could persuade Hanoi to restore these men to life, as it were. Take them to the same prison where the other prisoners are, and make the proper notification so that their families will know they are alive after all. In return for that, Colonel Grisanov will be returned unharmed and uninterrogated.
I will forward that proposal to Moscow.
Please be quick, Ritter said. The Vietnamese are planning something drastic.
Sergei nodded.
Colonel Grisanov is alive and well. We will not harm your colonel. He behaved honorably in his treatment of our people.
I will take you at your word.
I'll need 2 days. I'll call you, Ritter replied.
Very well. Good day.
On his way back to the car, Ritter realized that all of this depended on a young man who'd taken the time to think while on the run. Ritter was determined to bring Kelly in from the cold. Ryan interviewed a neighbor of Sandra O'Toole's and found out what he needed to know. Sandy had had a house guest, she said, a young girl, pale. They, Sandy and her other visitor, a short, dark woman, drove the girl somewhere recently, and she hadn't seen her since. Ryan nodded, not letting his satisfaction show. Doris Brown had returned home to Pittsburgh. Sarah Rosen drove a Buick. Sam Rosen, Sarah Rosen, Sandra O'Toole. They had treated Miss Brown. Two of them had also treated Miss Madden. They had also treated Mr. Kelly. After months of frustration, Lieutenant Emmett Ryan had a case.
But I wonder who that man was, the lady said, musing.
What man?
He was there last night. Tall, like you, dark hair, big, like a football player.
Thank God, Ryan thought, for people who don't watch TV. The one bad thing about the demise of Eddie Morello
was that the deal had required the loss of a large quantity of pure, uncut heroin, a 6-kilogram donation to the police evidence locker that had to be made up. They'd do one last batch on the ship, Henry figured. Then they could switch to the lab that Tony was setting up.
How soon? Bert asked.
Tonight, Henry replied.
Fair enough, boss. Who goes with me?
Phil and Mike.
The two new ones were from Tony's organization, and they were willing to do the mixing and packaging.
Take Xantha with you.
Boss, we're going to be busy, Bert objected.
You can leave her there when you're done.
Perhaps one at a time was the best way to do it, Henry mused.